You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 135. This episode, Immaculate Teeth. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/lanterns. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Corecast. I'm your host, Frank Mattel, and with me tonight are Eric Cahill, Brandon West, and Naim Siddiqui. Say hi.
What's up?
And today we're going to bring you everything you need to know about Green Lantern and Green Lantern related stuff, such as the news. What's going on in the news today, Brandon?
Well, last episode we gave you guys the news that Rafa Sandoval and Robson Rocha had both signed exclusive deals with DC Comics. Now comes the news that Green Lantern's writer, Sam Humphries, is now DC exclusive. Once a Marvel superstar writer, now home of DC Comics. They said in the press release that we should be seeing titles from Vertigo from him. So if you're a big fan of Green Lantern's and his writing style, you should be really excited for that.
Ooh!
So yeah. Sam Humphries is going to be writing for some Vertigo books, you said?
Yeah, he should have some creator-owned work. Nothing announced, but yeah, he should be into that. In other news, because I know you guys are really big CW fans.
Is this going to be that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the hit CW show?
I mean, like, as a big CW, I mean, I'm overweight, so I consider myself a big CW fan.
Look, I'm just saying, I watch every episode of Jane the Virgin.
This CW has really turned itself around now. You guys are really...
I didn't actually, but I
hear you.
Arrow's trying really hard to turn it back, but otherwise it's trying to turn itself around.
Are you trying to say Gossip Girl isn't quality television?
Yes.
I think some of the CW has had some shows that have not only stood the test of time, but are among the most enjoyable shows of all time. I mean... Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I mean, I count that because it's still in the banner. Supernatural, Smallville, Gossip Girl. Apparently,
The Creek.
Gilmore's still right. The Creek, also Dawson's Creek.
Reaper, of course.
Veronica sure. Mars would Reaper. Count under that umbrella if you.
I mean, I put them all. If you're putting them all in there, then yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Kids WB. That shit was awesome.
Kids WB was awesome.
Super. You know, if
but there is some. As everybody knows, there are four currently airing network shows, the CW that are DC Universe shows, and now that Supergirl's been absorbed
four
into their
if you count iZombie.
Octopus. Well, I guess
that's
right.
That's a half.
But there's a couple bits of news that are sort of relevant to Green Lantern fans. One is that the big time crossover that they're doing this year, every year. Every year since Flash premiered, they try to do one big crossover, and now they're going to involve three and a half of the shows. It's going to be like one of those, like the cliffhanger on Supergirl is the crossover is the next three episodes, and it's going to be like a four-night event, this huge thing involving the Green Arrow television show, the Flash, the Legend of Tomorrow, the DC's total mouthful, the show, and anyway, the villain is actually, it's been revealed that they're going to adapt the Invasion storyline to some extent, and the villains are going to be the Dominators.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the Dominators, and they've actually said
the Dominators,
not...
you say? Keep that in mind.
And which normally be like, well, who cares? But like, yes, as if anybody's reading knows, the Dominators are kind of, DC's trying to make them happen again. Stop trying to make Dominator.
This happens. It's never going to happen. Yeah.
Does that ever get old? Stop trying to make that joke happen, Internet. It's not gonna,
Four for you, Glenn Coco.
The creators have actually said that they are going to be using prosthetics and CGI effects to try to make them as accurate to the McFarlane version of the Tom McFarlane version of the Dominators as possible. So yeah, we don't know much.
Does anybody
on that.
Care?
About the Dominators or about that they look like the Dominators?
About that they look like the Dominators. They could be just dudes in, like, T-shirts and jeans, and it'd be like, yeah, it seems pretty, like, CW used their budget on King Shark again.
No, that's the thing, because, I mean, I think that's the real problem with those CW shows, right, is that they're it's kind of like they're this huge treasure trove of DC canon, like, blah, 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 like, tons and tons of DC canon. And then one or two things they do are just completely disregarding the canon. Like, basically, it's like, oh, Flash is such a great show because it's a good show. But then every episode is peppered with these really obscure bits of canon. And there's like, look how great we are because we're this great show and we have so much obscure bits of canon. And then something like Green Arrow, unfortunately,
executive producer Geoff Johns, right? Like,
well, he produces all the shows, but I mean,
Does he produce Arrow? I don't think he didn't develop Arrow. Like, he developed Flash or whatever.
I'm sure he was more involved, but I mean, he hasn't been creatively involved in the day-to-day in any of the shows in years. But I mean, it's just Andrew Kreisberg is really who it is. And basically Greg Berlanti, who runs the entire universe of TV at this point. He's like the dude Shonda Rhimes. His thing was, like, he loved The Flash. Like, Flash was his favorite. Kreisberg is like, yeah, Flash is one of my favorites. So basically, they like The Flash. They've read Flash for however long their lives are. You know, they want to do a Flash show. And then you have Mark Guggenheim, who does the other half, which is Legends and Arrow, the other half. Like, you know, basically, like, we need to have two more shows to keep this franchise alive kind of thing. And he's read comics his whole life, too, but apparently not about any of the characters he's working on. Because – I mean, you know, Green Arrow is a big joke. Haha, comic fans hate Green Arrow now because it's you know, they kill Black Canary because he's not a liberal and stuff. And that's definitely part of it, but it's also like, this shows suck. So they get into the network currently has this love-hate relationship with the fan base, you know, basically like, they like, we love our fans are so great, but we don't mean the comic fans because they're assholes.
We're doing a whole other episode. We could do a special on this.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I'm going off again. Anyway, I'll leave it alone. Anyway, Dominators are the villains for the four-part crossover. Also, we announced in a previous episode that Obsidian was going to be a recurring character on Legends of Tomorrow because they're going to be doing some time travel back to the Justice Society era, and they're going to be having a guy play him as a young man and a guy play him as an older man, Lance Henriksen of genre fame as the older version of him. And anyway, Obsidian, for those who don't know, is Alan Scott, the original Green Lantern son. We don't typically cover Alan Scott stuff in here, but I know Frankie and some other people have been anxious for us to maybe try for a couple of years. But regardless, somebody interviewed Lance
Henriksen. There hasn't been much Alan Scott stuff to cover for a couple
of
years.
Well, if there was, we wouldn't know, you know, but basically
we covered the Earth 2 book when it was around.
Yeah, but not recent Earth 2 stuff.
I think we did when it started, yeah, and then the show collapsed, but I mean, the show ended.
Anyway, continue what you were saying.
Anyway, they and so Obsidian has another claim to fame that he's a homosexual character, out and out homosexual character. And they asked Lance Henriksen about the character. Hey, are you going to be is it going to be an adaptation of the character of the comics? Like, oh yeah, it's straight from the comics. And the interview was like, are you going to be gay? And is he going to be the son of Green Lantern? And Lance Henriksen is like, yeah. And they're like, wait, yeah, all of that? He's like, yeah, it's going to be son of Green Lantern. He's going to be gay. And then he did an anecdotal story about the extent to which the character will be presenting himself as a gay character, which is great. But apparently, you know, whether Lance Henriksen realized what he was answering or not, Alan Scott is going to be somehow obliquely referenced in the show. We don't know. I mean, the show has gone out of their – I mean, the universe has gone out of their way to really pull off some surprises. I mean, they have freaking Superman showing up. So who knows if – I mean, I don't think Alan Scott's going to show up, but
– we've seen the famous Hal Jordan bomber jacket all over the place. So.
And they mentioned Coast City
all the time, yeah.
So I think
– I'm sure we're like a season away from Carol Ferris being a main character in one of these shows.
Well, I mean, you joke, but on this season they're introducing Hal's brother's
– not joking. Wife. I was not joking. That was not a joke. I was dead serious.
No, right. Hal's brother's future wife is involved in the show. So I mean, like, if you're a fan of, like, minutiae of DC canon, but you hate Green Arrow, you'll love the DC CW universe. But anyway, so that's what they're doing, again, tangentially related, but, you know, it's kind of cool. I mean, you know, maybe you'll get as much as they gave us on Smallville, where it was like, I think we did a whole episode devoted to that. and it showed like one shot of the lantern. So I mean, I say we should watch those shows because I don't want to suffer alone. But
I watch them. I don't watch Arrow. I'm not going to watch Arrow.
That's the news.
You can do that on yourself.
All right, Brandon. Was there anything else?
No, that's the news.
Okay. I'm making sure. I'm glad we all got that out.
That's the way the cookie crumbles.
So now we're going to bring our reviews as to the books that currently came out this week. With Justice League number 5, Green Lantern number 7, and Hal Jordan the Green Lantern Corps number 5. Justice League number 5, of course, I'm probably the only one who read it. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm the only one who
read it. I'm sure thousands of people read it, Frank, just not the other three people I guess with you.
I'm sure that thousands of listeners read it too, Frank.
I'm pretty sure everyone who was in this podcast with me did not read Justice League number 5, which is, again, the finale for this story arc that Brian Hitch was writing. And again, I enjoyed the book. I enjoyed all 5 issues. It's interesting. Very much like setting up the pieces for a larger mystery that's going to happen later on, which is, you know, Brian Hitch is very good at doing. But it felt rushed. Like, the ending felt very rushed. It was very much like, you know, we have to finish this up and get the ball rolling. We just want you to pretty much like coalesce this version of Justice League with the new Superman, the two Green Lanterns, and the rest of the Justice League, and make them work as a unit, and we'll go from there. The mystery was set up. We have no idea who, like, you know, what's the larger cause, the bombs that were set up in the middle of the earth, Superman's whole ordeal, like, you know, what's going on. But it was well written. It was cool. I enjoyed, you know, most of the art stuff that, you know, that Tony Daniel brought to the table. I do feel that Brian Hitch should draw his own book while he writes it, because it's, you know, it's how he normally does his work. But Tony Daniel is still preferred artist. He's still great. He's still awesome. And the book itself, you know, par for the course, I enjoy it. I like it. I just wish that it didn't come to be just because DC said, hey, you're working on Justice League of America. We're going to have to stop you, you know, midway through this book to make you write this other book with a new Superman, because your Superman is dead. Hal Jordan is not in this book. We need you to work on these two other characters and just, you know, work from there, and then make him go, oh, sweet, I'm glad, you know, this whole thing had to be like, you know, paused just because of this. But he works. He makes it work. It's a good mystery. It's a good you know, overall story. A little bit rushed towards the end, but I still say read it. You know, especially all 5 of them all together. Yeah, it was great, in my opinion. So we're going to move on from that. It's Green Lanterns number 7. The, you know, Family Matters number 1, you know, part 1, with not Robson Rocha drawing this one. Who's drawing this book?
Ronan Clique.
Brandon, who drew this book?
Ronan Clique.
Click vet. All right, cool. This is the
click it.
Click vet. Click. I say click.
I can't tell if it's a U or a V, so I'm gonna say
Caligula.
Caligula.
Yeah.
Thanks, Liam.
Yep.
Is this just like a thing we do now every week? We just butcher these poor guys.
Butcher these people's names.
But part 1, Green Lanterns number 7. It's an interesting book. I feel that it doesn't need to be anywhere near, you know, this storyline right now, especially at the end of the last storyline. They just finished destroying the Hell Tower, destroying, you know, getting beat by Atrocitus and his makeshift army of goons. And next thing you know, it's like, yeah, we got big cookies. This is the baking cookies issue that's supposed to, like, you know, make this team solidify as, you know, a partners, you know, with Simon Baz and freaking It's a weird book. It's a weird book to have no idea. I say borrow. I have no idea what to say for this book. It's one of those interesting stories. Like, oh man, look who's gonna freak out. Jessica's clearly gonna freak out because she can't handle the pressures of the you know, being around people. And it's Simon who freaks out when he can't make a cookie recipe right, because, you know, it's weird. It's weird. Eric, what do you think of this issue?
Well, I mean, you don't want to put. Well, I would say. You don't want to put it down too much because, I mean, obviously the writer is going for something different and going for something that's sort of like character development. So you don't want to say, oh, it sucked, whatever. And it's kind of easy to make fun of. No, I'm not saying you. I'm saying, like, me as the reader. So I'm it's so easy for me, like, it's so easy to make fun of it, because it's like, oh, ha, that's just the issue where they, as you said, the, you know, the cookie baking issue, which is like, it makes you think, like, does any narrative really need a cookie baking issue? But I mean, in terms of a narrative that comes out, a comic, a story, a serialized story that comes out biweekly, that's, you know, has, it needs to have breaks and issues, and that's the premise of this. It's a break in a storyline, I feel like, and the entire issue is not based around a plot necessarily. It's based around, like, Simon getting over something. So you do appreciate that kind of thing. With that said, I think it was, it's kind of super generic. I think Simon's, like, conflict is kind of, like, really overt, and it's resolved very easily, and there's not really any suspense or doubt, you know. Simon actually seems to be having an unnecessarily large conniption fit in the beginning of it about what's going on with the cookies and stuff. And I mean, as much fun as it is for there to be a Green Lantern issue, especially with these two characters, where basically they spend the entire issue talking about the cookies they're going to make, and like the conflict revolving around how good these cookies are going to be, and especially the intended joyful moment when they're both using their powers at the end of the baking session, and they're just really knocking these cookies out, and they're like, high five, bro, and that kind of stuff. Like, it's hard not to kind of want to be infected with the joyfulness of it, but it's a total turn off. I think the characters don't really pop here. It still has some of those really good lines of dialogue the writer's good for, but essentially, it didn't pull me in. Like I said, very generic conflict. And the art didn't really help either, because it wasn't a lot of – I mean, it's serviceable. Looked great, actually. Surprised, you know, the amount of detail that this guy was able to get in there. But also very generic and very straightforward. And again, if you're going to spend an issue developing the characters and having us just kind of spend time marinating with the characters, or I guess baking with the characters, you know, then, you know, give us something to really chew on. Give us something that's really interesting. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of becoming this old hat thing now for comics to kind of stop, pause, and have a living room, a bottle episode, so to speak, you know. But I just don't think this was a good example of it. So, I mean, I would say read or borrow, I guess, just for the sake of argument to get a sense of it. And if you're really a fan of Simon and you don't mind the kind of limited characterization, because, I mean, it's not like I'm expecting something really deep here. It just wasn't entertaining. So, yeah, I mean, borrow for the sake of argument.
Hey, Brandon, what do you think of the issue?
Yeah, I'm somewhere around there. I definitely appreciate what Sam Humphries was going for, because if you go on our website, thegreenlanterncorps.com, and you check out our forums at thegreenlanterncorps.com/forum, nice, you'll see a lot of people complaining that, you know, when's next time we're going to see Hal, Kyle, and John on Earth. Well, here's Sam Humphries giving you Green Lanterns on Earth.
You mean none of those lanterns that you just asked for?
Yeah, that's kind of like saying, like, man, how come I can't read about Batman in Bloodhaven? It's like, psh, Nightwing's in Bloodhaven. Like, yeah, okay, I guess.
No, it's not like that. It's a superhero humanized. That's what he's going for. And if you just take Simon Baz as Geoff Johns presented him as the guy who's always going to be considered a terrorist to some people because of his religion, and then you've got nothing. It's just fluff. But if you at least try to develop the character, develop his mother, his sister, brother-in-law, I guess.
It's yes, like, that's what the term is.
Who married his sister? Oh yeah, that brother guy.
Yeah, I feel like as much as Eric doesn't like want to crap on it for its quality, I feel like we should be commending him for this break at all. I mean, because he could have easily churned out, you know, another space adventure or another alien comes to Earth adventure. So I appreciated the separate tone and the escapism from the typical superhero comic. The problem is the finale of the issue, or the climax of the issue, is both of those Green Lanterns racing off after the Guardian, and it's like, this is Family Matters Part One. Like, I really right. wish you didn't waste an issue of an arc, you know, when you're gonna get right back to the action And now you're going to have to cram everything into four issues. Like, that's the problem I have with it.
It just seems so weird. It's ahead, like, Frank. Okay, so we're gonna have to like pause the book from like the previous book to this book, and we're gonna say this one strong story line of like how we're gonna humanize these characters, show them that, you know, that there's a human side. Simon is afraid of these things. He does want to make his mother proud. Jessica's like, oh yeah, I'm overcoming my anxieties by, you know, staying around and making sure that Simon doesn't blow it with his mom. But then you realize, oh yeah, there was the guardian sitting in a room with a phantom ring still there.
And she like, was like, too, just hanging out with I. How old is this kid supposed to be? Because it's right.
Like,
he doesn't understand they're saying Dominator at the end, so I guess he's supposed to be like 7. But that's the thing is,
I know a lot of 7-year-olds, and like, I mean, some of my best friends are 7-year-olds. Yeah, and they understand it's Dominator. They're not stupid. I mean, like, yeah, he's between 2 and like 9. It's weird. I guess maybe writers do have young kids, but I sometimes, now that I have kids that are of varying ages, so now I'm always like, it's like you don't have kids, or you forgot what they were like, or you,
I don't know, man. Yeah, like I'm 23, and like I go back and like remember media from when I was like 9 or 10, where people are like, "Yep, I don't know kids," and I'm like, "I'm the age you were then, and yeah. I just don't." Like, how do you not understand children? Like, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like just remembering your own childhood is not that hard. How stupid do you think kids are?
Yeah, to be fair, yeah. Sam Humphries does not have many children. And he recently just got engaged. So congratulations, Sam Humphries.
Hold on. Did you just say Sam Humphries doesn't have many children?
I think or he
doesn't
have any children.
Any children.
Any.
Okay. He does not have any. Right, okay. But, like, he's not 85. He's 40 years old. Like, he's not too old to, like...
He has to have been around a child. We're not going to judge Sam Humphries for his ability to write, like, children from the ages of 2 and 8. But,
or we could, and spend the next 20 minutes on it, because I don't mind. Exactly.
Brandon, what else?
If Sam Humphries was writing Teen Titans, and they were all borderline hipsters...
Hold on, that would be
like, this guy doesn't understand teenagers. No,
that's totally incorrect. Have you met a teenager? They're all hipsters.
I think it's funny because I watch like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoons, and I'm always like, man, these guys should be more mature. They're fucking around too much. And then I'm like, oh yeah, right, because they're 15. But then the voices are all like 30-year-old guys.
Yeah, Rob Paulson's like 80 years old. Like, whatever.
So funny.
I think the typical reaction is for a writer to write young characters a little bit too mature. And for once, we're getting someone writing a child as a little bit too dumb.
They write young characters too mature and children too immature. This is like, it's not...
This is such a nitpick,
right?
It's interesting. I'm just tangentially, it's like the same reason why like people hate the show The Strain, and that's the same reason people one of the reasons people hated the first couple seasons of Walking Dead so much, because of Carl, and The Strain has a Carl of their own. It's like a kid that's like somewhere between 8 and 30, but like he acts like a stupid kid all the time, and because the writers are like, kids are stupid, they just do stupid shit all the time, and like, so that's a kid is constantly being annoying and saying stupid shit or cute shit. So it's like either the kid is in deadly danger because of some dumb shit he did, or he's being super adorable and wants a teddy bear, so you think he's cute. So it's like this really kind of annoying, almost like offensive shorthand for like children that's like, eh, kid, you know. And it's almost like the writer is kind of saying like, yeah, you know, you're supposed to fucking like a kid, he's a kid, just like him, shut up.
That's a good point, because he did get a teddy bear in the last issue. I forgot about the teddy bear thing. Like, so he's
Aunt Jessica. I'm like, dude, you don't even know her, you know.
When you look at this kid like putting stuff on the top of the, you know, Rami the Guardian, you know, this random clockwork orange guardian, he looks like he's at least 13.
I think that's probably just on the artist, right? If he's super hype about getting a teddy bear, I think the artist just was like, a kid, cool, 13, and like, no, didn't ask.
Anyway, let's move on from this point. And Brandon, what were you saying before?
First of all, I'm not ready to move off this point. You guys didn't think it was cute when he was stacking things on top of the Guardian?
I would be lying if I said I realized that's what he was doing.
I just skipped those panels because they were like filler panels.
I was like, whatever.
I think that's perfectly like whatever. But like, it's in this book, he looks 13. It's a cute thing for a 6-year-old to do and not for a 13-year-old to do. But you have to remember, he's probably 6, and the artist just didn't
right.
know how to
and,
draw.
And
it.
then when they come in the room, they're like, "Why is all this stuff on the ground?" He's like, "I don't know. That's the kid thing to do." Anyway, I definitely give it a borrow. Just like Eric says, it's just enough to be enjoyable, but not enough to thrill me in the being excited for the Dominators or being, you know, really excited for more of this family interaction.
Okay. Nine.
So you guys know, like, when you're reading a magazine and in the middle, like, Superman and Wonder Woman pop up and it's like, oh, this is like a advertisement where they got the superheroes for like 2 pages to do some don't do drugs commercial.
Yeah, this felt like
what? Is it there? This,
yeah, yeah, this felt there. Like that for. That's Lebanese cookies. Yeah,
completely felt like that, right? Like the art looked like that. The writing.
Yeah, yeah, that's
like,
a good point.
I felt like I was in the middle of a Disney Adventures issue, and like the only reason
exactly.
I knew it wasn't is because Disney doesn't own DC. Like this read like a Disney Adventures issue, which is like whatever.
Yeah, exactly. My point is like, why do I want to make fun of it? Because basically, you could spend every page being like, "Is somebody kidding?" Every page, you know. But I didn't want to be like rude.
Well, whatever, man. Like that's our job, right? Whatever. read our iTunes reviews. They're all about how much we hate everything. By the way, please review us on iTunes.
We've changed. We're different now.
Swear to God. No, I don't think it was like terrible, right? But it read like. I mean, it's clearly a filler thing, and I get they're doing characterization stuff, and they're like, yep, we're baking cookies. But yeah, I mean. And yeah, I don't know, man. I can on some level like understand. I relate to the immigrant experience in the book with Boz and like how his mom, blah blah blah, all that stuff. Like as a Muslim immigrant to America, like totally get all that stuff. That makes sense to me. And it's you know I think it makes sense. Although I like how your dad say. I wasn't a terrorist. Like, we know, man. Like, you don't need to say it every issue. Guys, I'm not a terrorist. Like, we get it. You're not a terrorist. but I don't know. Like, it's... And also, at the beginning of the book, Jessica says she has anxiety, which is, like, she has agoraphobia, right? Like, anxiety is part of agoraphobia, but, like, just say agoraphobia. What's wrong with saying agoraphobia? That's been established.
Also, because her disorder, I feel like is poorly defined. There's, you know, it's kind of interesting. I just want to not to interrupt you. It's kind of interesting. She's so enthusiastic toward. It's like her character's kind of schizophrenic and not literally schizophrenic, but like actually, like you know, I was about to say bipolar. Is there a way to describe somebody having extreme mood shifts without actually ascribing it to a mental disorder? Because that seems very insensitive. Anyway, but like.
Mood shifts.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, there you go. Extreme mood shifts, but it's not punchy, you know? Anyway, but I complain because it's, like, she's supposed to be agoraphobic or she's supposed to have social anxiety disorder or something, and then yet she acts like she doesn't sometimes. And this issue...
She's, like, she just gets over it. Yeah. Like, every issue, she's like, yep, now I'm over it for this issue, which and then, like, oh, it's back. Like oh, now I'm over it. Like, it's just...
Yeah,
like,
but somebody, yeah, exactly. But somebody who functions would have it, but maybe this is the issue where the threshold would cross for me. Maybe it's like, oh, Jessica is agoraphobic, but she's just really dealing with it very well. She just constantly thinks about it, which is like,
yeah, okay,
I mean,
but
I get
like, but like when you're introduced to her, she's living like she. They keep mentioning that she like lived in an apartment and didn't leave for like 3 years or whatever. Like, she got real quick from couldn't leave her apartment to. High functioning agoraphobic, right? Like,
right, and able to tell a guy how to resolve. It's like, it's funny. The funny thing about the issue is that Simon gives his whole spiel about his mom, and Jessica literally has two lines of dialogue that is like, "No, just do what they do it on Step by Step. Just tell her you love her."
Yeah, like, and, look, and she's like, she's real good at dealing with the mom who she's never met, and with the kid who like she's clearly uncomfortable around. But like the previous issue, she's like, "Yeah, the bear was fighting. Haha, I'm great with kids because I'm a woman." Like, which is what it feels like, right? Like just because. Right. But I don't know. But I mean, all in all, like the you know, I don't know. And then I ate the cookie, and now I'm happy. Like, come on, it's. it feels pretty trite. I don't know. It feels pretty trite, and I get what they're trying to do with the character development, but I think if they're trying to develop Jessica's character to be a high-functioning agoraphobic, they did that way too quickly. So I don't know. I would actually give it a pass. You guys all gave it a borrow, right? But I'm going to give it a pass. Just
I feel like
you were being too lenient because I respect that he tried. I respect what he was trying to do. Right, he was trying to do a small scale. We're just going to hang out and do this. And on some level, like, I think it's a good thing that they did it. Like, you don't really see this in mainstream comics very much. So, like, good on you for trying
nowadays.
This. Yeah, nowadays, right? You don't see mainstream comics like just people chilling and having like this kind of like filler, and it's cool, I guess. But
I feel like, as Brandon suggested earlier, there's a dream issue in there somewhere. Like, you know, I mean, they had a couple of issues of when Tomasi was writing it. I remember a few of their, when they would reboot the series, there'd be a couple of issues where they just stood around on Owen and talked about shit. But I mean, at least there was some building and training and plot, so it wasn't quite the same thing. But for me, it's a dream issue because you don't want to just read them fighting Atrocitus at this point. Hopefully, 7 issues in, you know, you like the characters, but I think maybe this shows the problem with the series overall, that the characters themselves are not quite as interesting or developed as they could be. Sorry.
No, that's the thing. Right? I think the characters have a lot of interesting things underneath them, right? I think especially with Jessica, right? And I get it, right? I get it. It's tough. Like, you were, like, specifically, you were just trying to describe the thing about her character without being insensitive to, like, real mental illnesses. And she's a character who's been described, like, who's been given a real mental illness that's very difficult for a person to deal with, and a very severe case of it. And I get how it can be hard to have to juggle that with she's also got to be a Green Lantern and go out saving people. So I get it. I understand that it's a difficult thing to juggle. And like, I respect the attempt, but I think it just missed the mark in all the wrong areas.
I feel
Is it fair to say that Jessica's coping well, considering the issue prior, she was in a cave hiding from aliens in the Earth's core?
That's the thing that any reasonable person would do, is hide in a cave of aliens because there's aliens attacking the Earth. Like, she is a person who's been established as having, like, crippling agoraphobia, where, like, that's the kind of person who can't leave their house. And she's, like, she's dealing extremely well with it now. Like, anybody would.
But look what she's had to deal with.
Like, what do you mean?
She just had to deal with those disgusting aliens attacking her.
Right.
So I would assume
and I don't think you have
Simon's
to,
mother would be a lot easier to handle.
But it's never that clear cut, especially with someone who has, like, you know, like, a disability.
Yeah, we can have a whole episode about how mental illness works, but that's not how agoraphobia works.
Like, yeah.
So you're saying for the next Brightest Day special episode, we should do one about children in mainstream writing, and then another one about how mental illness should be addressed. I think maybe put them together.
My brother's a psychiatrist, so we could legit do an episode like that if we really wanted to. Like, I could get him in here. We could do it.
So we're gonna move on from this. I did want to say before wrapping up on this issue is that, again, I see what Sam Humphrey was trying to do. I see I saw what he's trying to do. Like, again, this issue does remind me of, like, issues from back in the day, like in the early 90s, where, like, you know, where there would be, like, that one break issue where a character is just trying to figure out something, like trying to figure out, you know, a problem or something that was right presented to him, and he doesn't really know what to do with it, and he goes through the issue without having to be a superhero, but just trying to be a person, and that's what this issue was very much. But I just felt it didn't do enough to merit, you know, that type of level of, like, commitment. He just didn't really, like, land, like, you know, hit the landing. Like, it could have been.
Absolutely. I think, like I said, I respect the attempt. I just missed the mark.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. Like, he misses the mark. He misses the landing. This is weird. Like, the way the story, like, you know, seems to, like, you know, progress from, like, Simon, like, you know, wanting to, like, try to prove his mom, you know, try to, like, make his mom proud, seems like it could have been really, like, something. It could have been cool. It doesn't seem like Jessica's, you know, entire character does shift, like, really quickly, like, you know, in, like, one issue. And in, you know, the whole thing of having the problem is the real problem I have with the issue is that it takes place right after, you know, the Guardian tells him, and I created something menacing. And he's like, all right.
Yeah, right. It's that, like, I guess now we're going to make cookies. And right. he's just gonna chill with the nebulous 6 to 12 year old upstairs.
Yeah, and he doesn't really. No one brings it up. No one brings it up until like later on. They're like, hey, where's Farid? And he's like, he's with the Guardian.
It's Carl from The Walking Dead all over again. The premise, it's like, man, Carl, stop throwing zombies at those people. He's like, sorry, and they just leave him alone for 3 days. Where did Coral go? It's like, I told him not to leave the house. Well, where have you? No, I didn't. I was doing something else. I was wondering, like, every single episode. So that's what it is. Farid just, they're like, oh, the Guardian's like, I had this horrible ring and anyone can use it. Wah, 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 wah. Okay, go upstairs. Okay. Like, Farid, don't go upstairs. Hours later, where'd Farid go? Probably upstairs. Probably exactly.
Yeah, I have no problem with the kit. I would have no problem with the kit if it suited the story. If the story didn't take place right after him saying, like, and I have a bomb. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh, yeah, we got big cookies in between you telling me you had a bomb and then you flying off.
Right. And that's the thing, right? Is if this was a totally self-contained issue, like, and this is mostly a self-contained issue, right? Like, I think you don't need to read this issue if you don't want to. But like, it's a perfectly solid read. I still gave it a pass, but, like, I think it's a perfectly solid read. But like, if this was an issue that was completely self-contained, that didn't end with, like, they didn't even have that Guardian in it, and it was like, oh, I guess this is just, like, this issue can take place out of time, out of any storyline, then I think it would be much, I probably would have given it a borrow, it would be much better for it. But because it ends with that and has him in the middle, then it's like, okay, well, and I also understand, right, how, like, removing it and being like, oh, it's not part of the storyline is like, well, what happened to that storyline we're in the middle of? So I get that, right? I get that's, again, a tough line to straddle, where you're trying to make something that doesn't need to be in the continuity, but also you need to, like, not piss off people who are like, where's the continuity? But if this was an issue that did not involve any of the greater storylines, then, you know, I think it would be better for it.
Really quick, like, before we move on.
Yeah.
It has the family reached a point of Carl. I don't hate him like everybody else hates him, but yeah.
Wait, are we talking about actual Coral from Walking Dead, or are we talking about the kid in this thing?
No, I'm talking about brother-in-law to child. Yeah, all of the supporting cast.
They're all
Have they reached that Carl level for you guys yet?
No.
No, they're useless. Yeah, they're totally useless. I don't have any interest.
No, they're like Hal Jordan's family, right? Like, they just sort of pop in and, well, like, all right, well, like, they're not going to be important.
They've been in every issue.
Hal Jordan's family, however, beforehand, before, like, you know, the big major events that, you know, Jeff Johns eventually started, like, throwing at everyone, like, at the window every single time, played a part. They were part of his story. They eventually showed up. You eventually learned about his brothers. You learned about, you know, like, what he did with his mom. You learned, like, you got. Actual storylines around, like, issues developed around, like, you know, what was going on with his family, and they were interesting, they were intriguing, and then later on the story kept going. Like, they weren't in between moments where it's like Hal Jordan has to, like, punch Sinestro because, you know, he's, like, destroying, like, Coast City, and next thing you know, oh, my brother hates me because I left my mom that one time, and then I still have to punch Sinestro by the end of the issue because I have to continue continuity.
I just wanted to make sure you guys weren't hating the supporting cast.
Oh, I have no hatred towards.
That's the thing. Okay, here's my thing, right?
I'm pretty ambivalent towards them, right?
I think the idea of them being a normalized Muslim American family as stars of this book, very mainstream, I think is really great and almost even important. And so I'm totally down with that. The problem is they're so normalized. There's nothing to them. They're just
right.
They've become narrative, like, traditional American narrative cliches, like, there's
which is weird because again they started off with Simon's sister's brother-in-law in a coma, like, you know, man, by his own because of what
Simon's
Simon,
husband
yeah husband sorry
Simon's
sister's husband in a coma because something Simon did in the original onset of his origin
story.
Here's
the thing, right? Is if we're talking about, like, them as a Muslim American family, like, it's hard not to draw comparisons to, for example, Miss Marvel and Kamala Khan, where, like, that is a family that, like, I read and, like, I'm like, oh, this is, like, hella my experience. Like, that's my life. Like, that's, you know, it's like, and And it's, you know, this is just like, all right, like that is just like, you could make these people, we were talking a little earlier about something kind of like this, where you could paint all these people white and it wouldn't really be a difference. You just would have to make those regular cookies instead of Lebanese right. cookies.
Yeah.
And it's so weird because originally their characters, like, especially like Kamala Khan's kind of like family live, like, you know, in a city, they live in, you know, in an area with more with an actual like life to it. Like there's people around or stuff. You see things they, you know, they interact with like community. Yeah. Simon Badger's characters are living in the suburbs in a freaking house surrounded by nobody.
Yeah, but they're living desert. in Dearborn, Michigan, right? Which is there's like more Arabs in Dearborn, Michigan than anywhere else besides the Arab Peninsula.
Well, once in a while, somebody will spray paint terrorist on their house, I guess. The thing is, my thing is, it's just that there's not. It feels like what it is the writer was like, oh, Simon Baz is a Muslim and he has a family that he's close with or he's trying to be close with. And that's a cool detail for the character. And it's the same thing as Jessica. Jessica Cruz is agoraphobic and she's got a sister that she's trying to be close with. That's a cool detail for the character. But I want to write them as generically as possible. So I basically just once in a while remind you she has a sister, remind you she has a family, but not in a way that's really contributing to the story. They exist just to add flavor, which I guess all supporting characters do. They're just part of the text to add flavor to the main characters. But essentially, like, there is a certain amount of, like, why does Simon need four rotating family members in this book now when he, you know, he's just learning about Jessica, he's learning about his powers, there's so much other stuff going on, you know, like, there was the bit of comedy when Rami was hanging out with the family last issue. It just wasn't particularly funny. I mean, it feels like they're there to be there to make Simon seem more interesting, just like Jessica's agoraphobia, but not in a way that he feels really interested or invested in telling a story about, which I know is ironic saying considering this entire issue was about that family, but if this is the story he chooses to tell with the family, it's this generic, my mother's too strict, oh, she doesn't like me, oh, she judges me. It's like, not only is that kind of like everything you've seen before, but it's kind of like what the kind of moron off the street would expect you to write if you're writing a story about a Muslim mother, you know, or any religiously interested mother. You know, just really just a huge I'm past the point of ambivalence for them. I'm getting a little aggravated at the sight of them. But again, I don't want to turn into who I was
eight years ago. Here's the most important question, though. Why isn't Simon wearing a shirt?
He can't put it over his weird metallic cast thing.
That like, is that like a super cast? What's the deal with that?
Like, who built that
where did
cast?
He get that cast?
Was it Cyborg? Did Cyborg build in that cast?
I mean, I when I saw it, I was like, oh, maybe this is one of those things where DC acknowledges the fact that since they have so many technologically advanced superheroes, they would have technologically advanced things, like be able to regrow hands and stuff. It's like on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where Coulson's got a super magic hand, and you're like, why doesn't everybody just cut off their hands and get these awesome super magic hands? Like, because that's a lot more useful than a regular hand. But
I bet you the colors were supposed to color it Green Lantern, like it's supposed to be a construct cast, and he didn't.
Maybe.
Half the time, I kept thinking that. I kept thinking it was a color mistake, but it just never changes. It just stays
the same. Detail. It seems a little too detailed for that. But maybe it's just something Raimi built, but that would be weird too. I don't understand. Maybe it's just supposed to be super technological, but I just feel like when someone has a cast in the real world, if you broke your arm, you don't need a super technological cast. And if you break your arm in the real world, you don't have to go around shirtless the whole time. Maybe Simon just doesn't like wearing a shirt. He's cool about not. He's like,
no. Okay, but like that's. But he's in his like. I would imagine his sister would be like, Simon, put on a fucking shirt. Like, you're in my house. Put a shirt on. You're making my husband look bad.
She's like, I gotta wear this as a job, man. You should put on a shirt. No, but like, he's Dom Toretto. I was about to say, it was Dom Toretto, but no, I think Vin Diesel makes a point to always wear shirts.
Vin Diesel's always wearing a tank top, like a white.
He's always wearing at least a tank top.
Yeah.
And his apron is standing for that tank top. It's just,
yeah,
you know.
True,
just...
That's true. Yeah, I guess. All right, let's do it.
Let's move on.
Yeah, for you. Hey, for you. You, the listeners of the Green Lantern Corps podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I recommend Demanding Respect, The Evolution of the American Comic Book. If you're listening to this show, then you're probably over the age of 20 and still read comic books, which is totally cool because we're all over the age of 20 and still read comic books. But
good for you.
But it's written by Paul Lopes, narrated by Lopes. I'm not sure. We're narrated by let's just butcher names. That's the hallmark of the show.
Is there a Z at the end of it?
It's an S, so I think it's Lopes, right?
Yeah, it's Lopes.
Yeah. Narrated by Robert A.K. Gagneau. But yeah, it's basically, it's, you know, it's how is it that comic books are now, like, which used to be like lowbrow, are like everyone's like making Hollywood blockbusters and video games and stuff like that. So it's all the recommendations I've done so far for the most part have been like, how did Superman become Superman? How did Batman become Batman? So this is, how did comic books become the biggest thing in popular culture?
For some reason, I thought it was just how comics became comics. I went, did someone die? Is that how it goes? Yeah, right. Those two examples you just brought up, someone died.
Oh, no, I meant like in popular culture, right? How did Superman become the dude he is in popular culture? How did Batman become, you know, the biggest thing in popular culture? How did comic books become the biggest thing in popular culture? And so this is, it's 10.5 hours. So it's a great use for your free free Audible membership. And if you want to download your free audiobook today, you can go to audibletrial.com/lanterns. Again, that's audibletrial.com/lanterns for your free audiobook. That's lanterns with an S at the end.
Is that easy, guys?
Is it an S or a Z?
It's an S at the end of lanterns.
I'm kidding.
Just like at the end of Lopes.
Lopes.
All right, so now we're moving on to Sinestro's Law Part 5 from Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns. Green Lantern Corps, written by Robert Venditti and drawn by Ethan Van Sciver. And I know Eric has probably had something to say about Ethan Van Sciver's art style this time around.
Yeah, man, you know what I'm going to say. I like his line work. Everybody likes his line work and a lot of his design work, but this was a mess from start to finish. I mean, it goes to show you that, I mean, there's that whole thing where, like, we all love him and we all want him to draw more comics, but there's sometimes a reason these guys do one or two issues, you know, one or two big projects a year, or it takes them a long time to do something. And sometimes it's not just because they're busy, or it's not just because they spend too much time on it, it's because their style doesn't really lend itself to sequential storytelling. I mean, there's so many parts in this where there's just, the story isn't being told, you know, it's being dragged out. It's over designed. I mean, I know sometimes it's gimmicky, like when Sinestro is having his powwow with his apparent lover, he's just naked after a panel, and I understand it's supposed to be, you know, those kind of time lapses are common.
Up the fact that he has an entire weird naked powwow with Lysa Drax.
Lysa Drax.
And then they're having sex, and the last four panels of that page where they were just standing around like next to, like, I don't know, an ottoman or something. He's like,
yeah,
hey.
And, you know, and even beyond all that, like, there's some really cool art. I think it's, which is weird, the coolest art for me was the bit in the middle. There's a couple pages where Hal and Sornik are talking, and it's just the two of them sitting on a thing and on a weird random jutting hill thing. And it was kind of, for some reason, that was kind of cool. There was a lot of energy in the see-through fingers.
Really, I thought that was terrible.
Stuff, pretty cool. But I think the thing is, but even that page had this weird, it's like, it used to be, back when everybody first got their PCs and stuff, there used to be that really awesome screensaver that was a fisheye lens that would roll across the screen, and that's kind of what this Ethan Van Sciver art looks like. It's like a constantly roving fisheye lens, and kind of a inappropriate uses of splash pages and stuff, and the part where all the Green Lanterns are attacking, I guess, the Spider Guild or whatever. Like, they're all about to attack, and everybody's flying in different directions, even though they're all going the same way. I mean, just really a hot mess. And then there's a bit where Elande fires the warning shot, but it looks like she destroys a ship, but I guess we're supposed to think that she fired a shot that scattered all these ships. Just basic storytelling stuff we don't understand because the artist is not getting some stuff across. I mean, again, really great line work, really cool looking stuff, but I mean, just proportions and story is just falling apart here. I mean, going down to the writing, I've said a couple times this series really likes to pump out these filler issues and stuff. And I get that I've been forgiving of it before because it's been entertaining, but there's nothing that happens in this issue that wasn't already covered in the previous issue. Hal basically describes to Sornik, I mean, the only real piece of information we get is Hal describing what his situation is with Sornik. And then the only plot thing, and even that's kind of something we already kind of knew, you know, and the plot thing that we get out of this issue is at the end, John runs into the Spider Clan or whatever, and they say, hey, we can tell you where Sinestro is. So basically, that's their plot. So I'm like, wait, your plot is to skip over what would have been an interesting plot of John looking for a way. Like, so basically, the first people that John and the Green Lanterns run into are the exact people he needs to run into perfectly set him up for the next scene. I think it was poorly written, I think, in terms of that pacing. The characterization isn't that interesting. I mean, I guess it's cool that Sinestro is sleeping with Lysa because you kind of assume something like that was going on, but it doesn't actually add to the story necessarily. Bad pacing, treating Sornik's reveal like yet another reveal, even though she was revealed as the savior three times last issue, it was kind of a rundown. Skyver's Sornik looks kind of cool. It's no Patrick Gleason, but I like a little better than I kind of like. She looks more mature than that the one that the we were seeing previously. But I don't know. I guess I probably want the other one back. But anyway, yeah. Just kind of a huge waste, definitely a pass. You literally could not read this issue, and you would not be any different than you were in the issue before, which to me is horrendous. And I think the best part about the issue is that it sets up clearly that the next issue is when a big conflict is going to happen. But because of the way they've barreled towards it, and because of my knowledge of just the way they write comics, and the way they barrel towards it, I know for sure that there will not be enough climactic action to justify this being the end of a storyline. Like, this next issue will be a climax that just runs out the clock for the next storyline to start, and it's disappointing. I mean, I think super duper pass. I mean, like, okay. How could you even pay for this? Like,
okay.
You know, what are you getting out of it? You like these events, Skyver?
Okay. Brandon.
The iTunes reviewers are feeling really really empowered right now.
Nice to the other guy.
Brandon, give me your take on this issue. Give me your take on this issue.
So, yeah, I will definitely say, like, at points, the Eth Van Sciver art did seem messy. Is Hal Jordan always supposed to be this ripped? Like, is he's, like, I didn't think he was, like, this, like, like, he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like, he looks like...
That's Ethan.
Yeah.
That's Ethan, too. I think that's all not... his humanoid...
Yeah, but that's still a negative, right? Like, and I guess it just doesn't come across as much in when they're wearing a super suit, right? When rather than when they're, you know, he's like pretty much naked, or when he's wearing like just the shirt. And yeah, there's points where like they're just sitting around doing nothing. And as much as like I've definitely had a problem with. You know, sometimes Ethan's character's in motion where, like, the perspective looks weird. That at least is like, okay, that's something stylized and, like, it still looks cool in motion. But, like, they're just sort of sitting around. And it's like, oh, the proportions just seem really wrong on, like, Hal Jordan's face. Like, he doesn't look... That's not, like, a human face at some point when he's talking. But, you know, like, as always, with the art, the splash pages are good. You know, Eric makes... a pretty reasonable point that not very much really actually happens in the issue. You probably could skip it and just be like, oh, real quick, Sornik heals Hal, and Hal is like, BT dubs, I might be made of pure willpower, and that's it. Like, that's really all that happens is Sornik heals Hal. Like, that's the only thing, I think that's the only thing you would miss by skipping this issue.
And she did that last issue.
Well, she didn't. She saved him, but she didn't like actually heal him, right? They didn't like have.
Well, you did see him get surgery performed on him by Sornik, and then that's pretty much.
Oh, did you?
I mean, we pretty much knew that she was getting healed up.
So you just have to be like Sornik was the one doing the surgery in case you couldn't tell, and Hal gets his ring back. And that's all that happens then.
Seriously, you know what they could have done to skip the whole issue? They could have had Hal get up out of to start the issue out of the side of the bed. Like, I can't believe this is what's been going on. Because we already know what's going on. We don't need Sornik to tell us again. You know, and then instead of even having John have a group and then fly off with them, why not have that be the cliffhanger? John runs into the Spider Guild and he's like, oh shit. And then the issue ends with them about to have a big fight. And then the next issue, big surprise when they show up with the Spider Guild helping them with an armada. Like, just, dude, you know, it's like, it's so much padding. It's like a scarecrow. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they probably could have done a lot of like shoved all that into the previous issue. Like put like that's like two pages you just described that could have been in the previous issue that probably could have been cut from the previous issue. Yeah, totally. I will like that's legit. I forgot about the Sornik being the Sinestro Corps leader thing. Was that actually mentioned in this book in Hal Jordan?
That was mentioned at the beginning of Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps.
It's been I know about it. I didn't read Green Lantern last year.
In the rebirth
issue,
it is mentioned. Yes.
So okay. So yeah, because I forgot whether or not it was. So it's just unnecessary here. I feel like Ethan Van Sciver is the only person in comics who either remembers or cares about that Green Lantern shaped scar on Sinestro's back. Like, I'm not even sure if that's still in continuity anymore. Like,
I don't like it if it makes me angry.
I love that it's still there because it's a glaring reminder that he got shot in the back by Kyle Rayner.
By Kyle Rayner. No, I like it just fine because it's cool. Okay, it's a callback to Rebirth, but like, did Rebirth still happen? Like, is that still in this universe? Because I feel like it doesn't really make sense to still be in this universe condensed this way. So I feel like
that means at some point Oliver Queen, the one in the New 52, was like, "Oh man, I didn't know this thing hurt so much." It's like, yeah, it hurts every time, man.
Yeah.
Every time. Rayner, guy that I met.
Because I guess Parallax still has to have happened. And yeah, I don't know. Like, it's when you think about DC continuity, condensation, it doesn't make any sense. So that's not
worth. Yeah, there's a draw. Yeah, there's a plus and a negative because Green Lantern. I think somebody mentioned this a while ago, but Green Lanterns have, even through crises and stuff, they've actually had a relatively consistent continuity that it does have a bunch of weird, funky stuff, especially when Geoff Johns got on there. But like, really, like, he was referencing stories that happened 30 years ago as if they happened, even though four or five reboots had happened since then. So there's drawbacks. Pluses to it because you can essentially read every Green Lantern comic and you get one narrative, but then there's obviously drawbacks to it because then what the fuck happened in Rebirth then?
Because Parallax still exists, right? So Rebirth, yeah. some form of the Parallax stuff happened, but at the end of the previous issue of Green Lanterns, the Rogue Guardian, whose name I'm forgetting because it doesn't matter,
Rami,
who cares. Like the star of Mr. Robot. But at the he goes like the legendary Green Lantern Hal Jordan. It's like he's like it's still 5 years, right? He's still only been Green Lantern for 5 years, right? That's how it works.
Technically, he's been more. It's been continuing since the beginning of Green Lantern. So he's since the new Rebirth. So it's been at least now. How many years has it been since Flashpoint?
It's been like maybe
it was
like,
five.
It's been like started. It was five when it started, so it must have been like six by now, right? Like at maybe. So six
at
years.
Maybe, that's right.
He's been Green Lantern for 6 years. Right? Legendary Green Lantern for 6 years. Like,
you don't have to be. defeated the great Sinestro, who has, you know, whatever.
Like, there's a lot of stuff has been condensed into these 6 years, right?
I do love how Hal Jordan makes a reference, going like, me and Sinestro have done this dance so many times, I know every one of his moves.
Yeah, over the last 6 years.
Well, I think it's funny too that Sornik is like starts to tell him, he's like, I bet you he did this and this, and she's like, how did you know? And it's like, well, first of all, Sornik, anybody could see where that story was going.
Yeah,
but it is true that it seems like a weirdly specific series of events, and Hal's like, I know he's done that before several times to me. He's faked illness so that I can gain control of his
I think Hal just like this is, it's because it's a poorly right. written like it's just a straight like a pretty straightforward storyline, right? And I don't know, like, so, that's probably Cullen Bunn's book.
But what do you give this issue?
Yes. Sorry. So, yeah, I give it a pass. Okay. If Rafa Sandoval had drawn it, it would have been a borrow because of the Rafa Sandoval art. But, Ethan Van Sciver's art is again, it's what you think from Ethan Van Sciver, but he can't draw at speed. And we've known this for the last 15 years, right, or 10 years or whatever, that he can't draw this kind of stuff at speed. I will say, I don't know if Eric mentioned this last time because I didn't listen to the episode, but he does do the thing that only Ethan Van Sciver does, where the blacks in the Green Lantern suits are like pure total black.
Yeah.
So that's cool. But Hal Jordan wearing just the plain black shirt is also pure total black, which you gotta show a distinction between the two, right?
Yeah, it's not cosmic anymore.
His t-shirt's not cosmic.
He just made it out of ring willpower or whatever. Yeah,
what's with the Star Trek outfit anyway? Is that just like they just have space shirts? Like, oh yeah,
I guess Sornik had a space shirt that she gave him.
Does he have those very short, cut-off shorts?
Well, you know, I think those are just his boxers. I think those are just his boxers.
Sorry, where did you get his space shirt and these space boxers? Oh, from my ex-space boyfriend.
We went to space Walmart.
Hashtag space moved out.
Brandon, tell me what you think of this issue. Give me some of that.
I'm a little bit more positive than you folks seem to be.
Can I just say,
I haven't even given my opinion on this issue yet, but yeah, go ahead, Brent.
I enjoyed the scene with Guy Gardner getting tortured quite a lot, actually.
Thank you. I was wondering what someone was going to bring about the greatest part about this book, the very beginning, first two pages.
You're right. I apologize. That was a good scene.
Well, yeah, I liked him doing the oath. It's cool, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed the scene.
Yeah, I mean, he literally stuck a dagger right in his, like, chest. I mean, it's hard to tell what part his of tummy, his chest.
Yeah, it was his tummy.
His
tummy chest, but it's definitely not. There's no wound at the end of the issue, so it doesn't really matter.
I did, by the way. I missed the previous episode, but I really did like the stupid dick joke in the last issue.
What, the Cindy joke?
No, the dick joke in the last issue. Where it's like, in this issue, the dick joke in this issue, where it's like, I've seen all of you, and I'm not talking about your spleen. Like,
Saranik
saw Hal Jordan's dick.
I'm telling you, at some point, Hal Jordan and Saranik Natu are getting together. I'm just
not
at
all. Swapping with Kyle.
Not happening.
Where the fuck is Kyle, man? Where the fuck is Kyle?
He'll show up soon. Anyway, Brandon, continue what you were saying. We have to hurry this up.
Yeah, this series needs to be retitled John Stewart's Increasingly Bad Decisions.
Increasingly Poor Decisions of John Stewart. Yeah.
Yeah.
That show sucks, by the way. Sorry.
But I'd watch that show with Common as John Stewart.
It's like, hey, there's a horde of people coming at me. Let's take these limited resources I have and let's just full on attack them. Screw what we had planned, despite what my number two, like, literally just said to me, in that, you know, we're struggling here. I'm going to attack this army. No probable cause whatsoever.
They're not even doing anything. They're literally just flying, and he shoots a beam that scatters their ships across in the winds and shit.
A warning beam
into their midst with is that a space warning beam that he fires into their space?
He shot at all of their bows. He shot at all, you know, just across all of their bows at the same time.
Space warning is
making sure that none of their ships sank in space.
There's such a thing as too much detail, because it then confuses things, right? Like, well, that's the problem with like Transformers. Sorry. Okay.
Brandon.
No. I guess I kind of want to pull back the curtain here. We discussed in the pre-show how Luke Cage wasn't, or how Mike Coulter wasn't really black enough.
No, I want to see where he's going, gentlemen. I want to see where he's going with this.
And let's just pretend Brandon was the one saying that, just for the sake of argument.
So, Brandon, you were saying Luke Cage wasn't black enough, huh?
Right. So when this issue comes along, I'm just reminded that John Stewart is such a one-note character, is that he's too military. You know, like,
yeah,
would like it if everything out of his mouth wasn't, you know, an army saying.
Yeah. Doesn't the previous issue end with him saying "Oorah"?
Yep.
Like,
right. And like the first thing out of his mouth now is like, "Oh, we're gonna show our line in the sand." Like, they don't know what you're talking about, sir. Like, that's totally inappropriate to say to a bunch of aliens.
Does the ring not
imagine translate? One of the.
I imagine the ring translates idioms.
I don't know. We don't technically really know that.
Yeah.
I assume that ring just doesn't bother when he's spouting stuff like that. It's just like,
it's like I say the same shit again.
I do think we got some good information out of this issue. Just strictly with that scene with Hal and Saranik sitting in that other sector. The fact that he can tap into not control it, but the fact that he's connected to the other rings or the other emotional spectrum, that seems like a pretty big deal, you know.
Hey, hold on, he can do what?
He's attached, or what did he say? I think he said he was
tapping into, like, you know, an infinite amount of willpower.
Essentially,
like,
he said, I could tell something really wrong was happening to the spectrum. It almost knocked me out. I can control the process if I concentrate, sort of.
Yeah, essentially, right.
So, I don't know. If he can sense big things happening, like, let's say, for instance, the Blue Lanterns were slaughtered tomorrow, right? And Hal Jordan felt that. I feel like that's a pretty big deal. That's,
yeah, the, like, Jedis can feel all, you know, death of a million people. Yeah,
exactly. I feel like Vendetti is going somewhere potentially great with this, and making that every Star Wars fan hates, like Mandalorian, something like that.
Yeah. Mandalorian.
Oh. Yeah. Jar Jar?
Felicity
is it
Smoke.
Jar Jar?
Felicity Smoke.
Felicity Smoke. Felicity Smoke.
I don't think he's going that direction, but I do think he's trying to build upon this emotional
Al Jordan being the one
best way possible.
Yeah. Well,
if Al Jordan, if he already did a pretty poor job, no offense, Robert, but he did a pretty poor job in making Hal Jordan the last
No offense,
Jedi.
Robert, please come back on the show.
I just think making him essentially like, it's kind of like making, you know, because essentially Hal Jordan's like, it's hard to, he's Han Solo, but like if he was a Jedi, which is like, that sounds cool. But right. Then once you do too many stories with Han Solo as a Jedi and then all of a sudden he becomes Yoda.
That's Kyle Katarn, right? That's Kyle Katarn.
We'll see, I guess, because he right, became a Jedi by the thing. Well, he wasn't Han Solo. He was just like an Imperial trooper who grew a beard and then...
Anyway.
You know, he wasn't like... Han Solo, no, all Han no. Solo is late.
It's fine. It's out of continuity. Doesn't matter.
Right, exactly. All
legacy.
Han Solo is...
They're called
Han Solo is lazy, sassy, and that's all he really is. It's like lazy sass. And that's Han Solo, but he doesn't have any skills or anything. Like, oh, he's a pilot. He's good at this. We don't care. We just like him because he's lazy, sass, and he's in Star Wars. So, like, Hal Jordan's like that, but capable. So he's like, you know, making him Yoda stretches the character. I don't know. I don't like him turning into like this because it ends up being like... You don't need to really – I mean, he's already capable. He's already famous. He's already legendary. We don't need to actually make him the battery. But we've seen Hal get ultimate power so many times that
– Yeah, I was about to say, like, this isn't anything new. Anyway, Brandon, before that, Brandon, what do you think of – what do you think? You give it a buy, pass, or borrow?
I think I'll give it a buy, not because Ethan was spectacular, not because I think this
amazing.
Spectrum power was – or is leading to something amazing, it could. But I think because I'm giving Robert the benefit of the doubt in that he knows he has Ethan Van Sciver drawing issues 4 and 5 so far in advance that he's probably written this issue so far in advance that, you know, it had no choice but to be as bland and basic as possible. When you write for Ethan Van Sciver, you're
that does not sound like a buy. Like that's not...
Yeah, that's
not... No, it doesn't sound like what you do for Ethan Van Sciver. You'd want him to do something.
No, but you have to plan so far in advance that you can't plan. You can't write this issue without. Let me put it this way: you write for Ethan Van Sciver for big moments. You got Guy Gardner being tortured. That's a big moment. You got Sornik and the Green Lantern Corps potentially going head-to-head with a bunch of random ships. That's a big moment. You got Hal Jordan having this heart-to-heart with Sornik. At the same time, Sinestro is having his heart-to-heart with his number two. I feel like those are big moments.
I feel like you're describing the definition of filler moments, but I mean, yeah, I don't know. Well, can I say two things really quick before I forget?
Sure.
That's all right.
Okay, continue.
What is with this one thing? I'm just trying to make sure, Brandon, what you're trying to say is you don't think Jon Stewart is black enough? And then the second thing I wanted to say was that what kind of hellish landscape are Sornik and Hal talking in? I know this is just because it's probably the colorist or the background artist trying to fill up space because Ethan probably didn't draw space behind them. But, like, there are, like, literally 1,000 shooting stars behind them.
I want to
like,
say, what do you mean hellish landscape? That's the most romantic setting in the world.
Just
so
like,
you see,
there's like a whatever. Like, it's a meteor shower.
A planet.
Yeah. Not only is Sarenic and Hal Jordan both talking, having a heart-to-heart, you know, about whatever Hal Jordan's hand is turning into, but both Liza Dark and Sinestro are making sweet, sweet love somewhere in his castle to these same shooting stars.
They're just
by some space. I'm just saying, like, that looks incredibly dangerous. Like, if I went outside and there was that much shit happening in the sky, I would be very upset. Like, I would just be upset. Like, I'd be Chicken Little.
Green Lanterns, man. Anyway, I didn't want to say because again we're running short on time, and I didn't want to take my opinion on the book itself.
Oh yeah.
First off, I'm gonna give it a bar. I'm not giving it a pass. It is an interesting read. It is. But there's so much like Eric said, much like Naim said, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't really happen in this book. Like, you know, there are moments, but they're all weird moments that could be saved for like either previous issue or for stuff that's gonna happen in the next issue, like coming up. The torture scene with Guy Gardner. Literally, I bet you it's still going to be happening in the following issue. Like that scene, that sequence with him being tortured, probably going to happen, and it'll probably be resolved by the second issue. But they're just seeing him, like, you know, mouth off and all the stuff. Really interesting stuff. It's really cool. I did like that it was happening in this issue. But I still bet they're still going to be doing it down the line in the next issue. The whole how Jordan being repeating, like, what happened to me, Sinestro scum, and it's like, oh no, it's me, sorry not to, coming out of the shadows. He was like, okay, but we already knew that last issue. I don't even know why we need this here. Sinestro literally saying nothing but the plot of what's happening in all five issues of, like, oh man, I built an entire empire and I feel like it's gonna crumble to my feet because of the, you know, because of Sinestro, because the Green Lanterns are now back. Which you learned the previous issues.
I was gonna say, I bet you the thought process might have been like, we don't know if people are gonna pick up all the Sandoval issues, but they might pick up the Van Sciver stuff because it's Ethan Van Sciver. So let's recap the whole book in there.
True. But also, like, a lot of people do write to, like, for trade, and these are still written for trade nowadays. It's like, it's weird. You're going to be reading the same book
in the trade paperback. It's going to be garbage. And
it's going to be so, like, so much repeated information. But, and then the whole, and also it wasn't the Spider Guild that they were fighting at the end of the book. It was just a line that Yolanda says at the end of the book, something about her father, some trade negotiation with the Spider Guild. The whole fleet that they're fighting are just a bunch of random fleets that were all under the Sinestro Corps watch, and were like a bunch of their members were eventually taken from there, and now they're trying to go to war with Sinestro to get them back.
So they just shot at a bunch of ships they saw flying around in space. Yes.
That was unprovoked for no discernible reason except for the
fact that they didn't even scan them to show they didn't have any weapons because the guy says we don't have weapons.
Yeah, except for or minimal weapons. The thing
is,
does that sound
Green Lantern-y to anybody?
But the thing is, they have the way that I gathered is that John Stewart's entire reasoning and the way that he's leading everyone is that they're wounded. They're like a wounded pack that need to survive. So the first threat they saw, they went like, okay, we can't renegotiate with them. We got to take them down. Even though his first shot was a warning shot to negotiate with them, to let them know, like, hey, we will defend ourselves if you attack. And then they were like, oh, shit, Green Lanterns, we're so glad you're here. And he's like, oh, that's cool. I'm so glad you weren't a threat because we were prepared to die in our combat with you. It's like, you know, it's weird. It is very much very, very, like, we need to, like, streamline what's going on right now. We need John Stewart to be in point B by now because he was still in point A. So we have to get him from here to here because the plot demands it. So we set him up with, like, you know, a bunch of people, like, you know, get him on the course. We need a Guy Gardner to be with Sinestro because Sinestro needs to know that the rest of the Green Lantern Corps is alive instead of just knowing that Hal Jordan is there. So we need Guy Gardner to be set from point A to point B. It's like there's a lot of setting up the dominoes and setting up the pieces instead of letting the story really be organic. It's just very, okay, I need a conflict. I need to set up my conflict, so I need to set up the board, and I'm setting up the board really fast. You know, it's just really fast. It's like I need to get everything moving. I need a giant fight to happen by like issue 7. So it's weird. It's not organic enough. It's you know, the first couple issues are fun because there's a lot of levity, and you know, freaking Sandoval's art is really cool. You know, Hal Jordan seems like, you know, all that Devil May Care Maverick stuff is awesome. But these two issues that happen with Ethan Van Sciver are very slow. They're very like, you know, reserved because there's a lot of, you know, big shots. There are a lot of, like, you know, pinup art. There's a lot of, like, you know, big grandiose moments, but there's not much happening in them.
Yeah, what I just realized is, you know, most arcs are six issues, right? Most trades are six issues. This arc has been Hal Jordan is trying to get to Sinestro, and Sinestro is trying to get Hal Jordan to him, and we're on issue 5, and they have not been face-to-face yet.
Nope. Well, it's minimal travel, though. I mean, essentially, Hal went from one planet. We went to one city and then got knocked out.
But now he's being shot there like a rocket. But it's Hal wants to be where Sinestro is, and Sinestro wants Hal where he is, And like that seems like it's okay, cool. Like both the hero and the villain want the same thing right now. They protect.
So you don't give them that because that's not what you do in writing. You never give them.
No, I think, but they're still gonna get it. On the sixth issue, and like there's been very like it's all been filler conflict up until like
that's a good point actually, because essentially if the writer as what you're saying, Hal wants to know who's doing everything. He finds out it's Sinestro pretty quick. He wants to get to Sinestro. Sinestro wants to know what's going on. Finds out Hal's there pretty quick. And wants to get to Hal. So instead of having it be a gradual thing where they discovered each other, or maybe Hal didn't even know Sinestro was behind everything until he got to the base or all that stuff, they set up the conflict really early and then didn't – and you're like, okay, they're going to give them a lot of stuff to do before they run into each other. It's like, not really. Hal got into one fight for three issues and then slept two issues, and now it's going to go back to the last fight.
He fell from the sky hard enough to require surgery.
But so. I think you're right. Like, it could have been more interesting if they had not learned right away that, oh, like, you know, Hal's like, oh, I guess I'm fighting Sinestro, and Sinestro is like, Hal Jordan's alive, cool, I want Hal Jordan, and that's like issue one or two. Like, if they hadn't figured that out right away and it like was a slow burn of them figuring out that the other one is their enemy, that it would have been more interesting than them fighting right away, and now you spend four issues of them like not really acting on it.
Maybe they didn't want to well, that's a writing thing too, because maybe you don't want the audience to be so far ahead of the characters by six issues, you know? Like, we know it's Sinestro, you know, let Hal know it's Sinestro pretty soon. I mean, okay, I don't think he really finds out.
I mean, but you say that, but then also there's the whole Sorenik and Hal conversation in this issue where clearly that she's explaining
100%. Stuff. 100%. Like, yeah, 100%. Repeat information. You know?
But yeah, like I said, I give it a bar.
But man, Guy Gardner's teeth in that first splash page.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. Just
so immaculate.
Immaculate teeth.
Immaculate teeth.
You'd think one of them would have gotten screwed up in like college playing football or something, you know? But no.
You think he'll have at least one crown or something, you know, something going on in there, but nah, he has.
Great teeth.
Unfortunately, the top dental plan.
Gardner needs braces.
Okay, we're not talking about that Simpsons episode.
So the problem is the top row of teeth is super crooked in his mouth. I mean, it's like the proportion for the teeth is totally wrong. Like, his two front teeth...
Eric, we're trying to compliment.
Stop him in that. It's like the middle... The tooth gap starts in his left mouth.
Eric, we're just trying to compliment.
The Sinestro page looks great. Those two Sinestro pages look fantastic. It's almost like he's drawn like Eric Larson. It's really great.
Okay, so that's pretty much it. Like, you know, again, give it a borrow. We're very divided in the cause of this issue. So we're gonna guess we're pretty much done. Those were our thoughts, our reviews, our rants on these Green Lantern issues that recently came out. Hopefully you guys liked it. Hopefully you guys will check it out. Tell us how you like the issues yourselves. Again, comment in the greenlanterncore.com forums. From there on, you know, I'm tired. Stay gold. I think that's what Colton says, right?
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. You can email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com, follow us on Twitter @theGLCorps, or reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814. Check out Kirby Crackle, performers of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com, and the Roy Clark Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at royclarkmethod.webs.com.
I have this magic ring. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, "How? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong. And don't make us wait for too long." We'll be right back.
What's going on in the news today, Brandon?
Brandon's dog probably just peed on his floor or something. So.
No, I just muted my mic, my man.
Symbolizing there was nothing going on in the news today.
That's audibletrial.com/lanterns for your free audiobook. That's lanterns with an S at the end.
Not a Z like Lopes.
Not a Z like Lopes. Oh, by the way, it is a U in cliquette or cliquette, clique. He's Brazilian, which, like, it seems most artists now, a lot of artists nowadays are Brazilian. I think Robson Roach is Brazilian as well.
A lot of good talent coming out from Brazil. So, yeah, so
they couldn't, couldn't make it as footballers, so they turned to art instead.
It's like, every time I wanted to say us butchering these guys' names is kind of a recurring joke of us being racist on the show, but then you just got to go ahead and go full out. Good for you, man.
What? Oh, the Brazilian footballer thing? Yeah, I got that. That's fair.
Pele. I mean, good for you, I guess.
Hey, man, you're the only white person here, so let's...
Frankie's... How many Brazilians on the... Everybody raise your hand if you're Brazilian on this cast.
Frankie's
right
Dominican,
now.
So I think we can... He's usually the one butchering Hispanic names, is what I was about to say.
Okay, well, I'm just going to say, because it almost sounded like you were saying that, like, it's not racist to stereotype Brazilians because they're just like Dominicans.
I was just saying...
It's not racist to also say that because I have Brandon, my black friend.
Can we talk about Luke Cage then? Because I wanna make a point to say that.
All I'm saying is the dude who is actually Hispanic is the one who can't say Sandoval.
It's Sandoval, all right?
No, it's not.
Sandoval.
I just don't think Luke Cage seemed all that much like a black American living in New York. That's all. You could replace him with any old white guy with a cowboy hat or the same guy, Jessica Jones.
They're
excited to see Luke Cage.
That is 50 minutes and 35 seconds into the recording.
That's what you want. That's why you want death. We have to delete all that. Okay.
To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/lanterns. Again, that's audibletrial.com/lanterns with an S for your free audiobook.
It's that easy, guys.